Anonymous podcast. I really want to thank you for joining us for a third episode. There are a few of you out there. We've been getting some comments back, so that's great. I want to remind you that you can find the podcast at watershedwellnesspodcast.com. And again, I'm Eric Gray, and I'm sort of the permanent host of the podcast, although hopefully some other folks will step in as well. And this third episode is the first one where we're actually going to hear from somebody else, which is great. And today we're talking to Rowan Everard, who's a licensed acupuncturist, just started at Watershed Wellness in Portland. Rowan's been writing a series of articles that you can find on our blog, all about the work that he really got interested in school around trauma and the treatment of trauma and certain after effects of trauma with Chinese medicine. So in this episode of the podcast, I just wanted you to get to know him a little bit. I wanted you to hear what his practice is about. He talks about his lineage, talks about how he came to the medicine, and you know, there's a few interesting nuggets along the way, just as we talk. So I hope you enjoy it, and please do go to that URL, watershedwellnesspodcast.com, and give us some comments. Let us know what you think about it. Let us know anything that we could do better, any topics you'd like to hear about, and we'll really look forward to hearing from you. All right, thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Okay, so the best way to get started is just for you to introduce yourself with your name, and then maybe just tell us how you came to Chinese medicine, like what brought you to this wild profession in the first place.
So my name is Rowan Everard, and I was a patient before I was ever a practitioner. I moved here from the Chicago area, and there wasn't any access to Chinese medicine or anything like that where I grew up. And then I went to go see a chiropractor for my shoulder. And then that chiropractor was like, "Your asthma stuff is crazy. You should go see this acupuncturist." And I said, "Okay." So 7 years later, yeah. I decided I wanted to study Chinese medicine because I kept asking questions about it obsessively until I was like, well,
I should just So were you just interested in it, or was it because you were getting better and you were curious about that? Or
yeah, kind of both. I actually started reading books about Chinese medicine when I was in middle school, kind of through a weird happenstance. My dad had a roommate in college who was Korean, and who had given him a bunch of books about, like, Qigong theory.
Interesting.
That my dad just kind of had lying around, and then he thought I might think they were cool, so he gave them to me when I was in middle school.
Wow.
So I had this, like, sort of basic understanding of Qi and all this stuff from middle school that I kind of forgot about until I started doing Chinese medicine. I was like, oh, yeah, this is really cool. I forgot how much I like this stuff.
Yeah.
And then I just was getting to this point where I was almost done with undergrad, and I knew I wanted to do something that was going to help people, but I didn't really know what. It's like, I could be a teacher, I could be a lawyer, I could be a whatever, professional nonprofit goer, too.
Something, yeah.
Someone who doesn't get paid ever.
yeah.
And I was like, well, I hate paperwork.
So I'm going to be a doctor.
So don't be a lawyer. And I really like... Well, the other thing is that I kept doing, I did all this door-to-door canvassing, and I kept having all these interactions with people that, basically, I would do therapy for them at the door, and then they would give me money. And I started to feel like, well...
Because of the conversations you were having with them?
Yeah. I see. It'd be like, let me tell you about my divorce, or
you're like, I should really be getting paid for this.
Yeah, and I was like, maybe I'm in the wrong career, because I'm enjoying this, but...
Okay. Yeah. And so you went to school at NUNM, and you graduated when?
2015.
And when you were in school, kind of what did you focus on or specialize in, or what was interesting?
I focused a lot on treating emotional stuff of various kinds, and sort of the place where various kinds of trauma intersect with chronic pain.
Okay.
Because I know so many people, particularly in the queer community, that have, like, fibromyalgia type conditions, and it seems like nobody gets good treatment for that.
Right.
So I got more and more curious about, can we treat this? What would that look like?
Right.
So that's what I wrote my thesis on, and so I studied a lot with Brant Stickley and also with Roger Batchelor.
Okay. And so the trauma thing, I think, is really interesting, and you wrote that article, I mean, you've written a couple times now and referenced it. You know, I think that's one of those words that is kind of like, it's not really lingo, but it's lingo-esque within our community. Yeah, because when you say trauma, like, to your average patient out on the street, they're like, oh, what do you mean? Like, they don't know what that means. So if you could maybe describe kind of like what, you know, from your learning, like, what do you mean by trauma and, like, how does it actually attach to, and I know that this is your thesis. Would you summarize your thesis in 1 minute?
Sure, we'll do it. So Dr. Shen, who is my teacher's teacher, describes trauma as basically any overwhelming experience that causes a person to fear for their life.
Okay.
And any overwhelming experience that the person is, like, not capable of processing all the way through in that moment.
So even as a baby or...
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's subjective because different things, different people will recover from different things.
Right.
So someone could be in a car accident that was very scary, but then have the right kind of support available to them and whatever and be able to move through that pretty quickly and not end up being traumatized by it.
Sure.
But then another person could have the same car accident and be like still having nightmares and flashbacks 5 years later.
Right.
So it depends on the person's sort of inner resources and their social network and their ability to access care and all of those things. The odds of someone having those things as you get younger and younger are less and less, generally speaking. So much of the trauma that we see in the world is from people's childhoods.
Right.
But not all.
Right, of course. So. Of course. And so so the system that you learned in school really addresses this stuff head on, right? It's like a kind of, I mean, maybe you could talk just briefly. I know, again, this is kind of a big topic, but, you know, I think one of the things that I really want to talk about on this podcast is the fact that Chinese medicine, just like naturopathic medicine, just like massage therapy, all these modalities, people who don't have experience with the profession, they think that it's all the same thing, right?
Yeah.
You go to one acupuncturist, it's the same as any other acupuncturist,
right.
But what they don't understand is the lineage background. And one of the things that I was excited about bringing you on, and also Melinda, who has similar background, is that you do have this lineage that's so different from mine in many ways. And so maybe you could just describe kind of, you know, just a little, whatever you can think of about that lineage that, you know, and speaking to trauma, like how do they look at trauma and what does that mean in terms of treatment, just in a very broad sense?
Yeah. So Dr. Shen and then Dr. Hammer. So lineage-wise, Dr. Shen is a, I believe, Korean-American fellow who actually is related to, teacher-wise, the guy in Fourth Uncle on the Mountain.
Oh.
And they use the Shen pulse system.
Oh, I did not know that.
So that's like a
interesting.
A fun factoid for people who are super nerdy about Chinese medicine books. That's actually a really cool memoir that anyone can enjoy. But
what's the name again?
Fourth Uncle in the Mountain.
Okay.
I forget
the
name, but
we can
about
link to it.
This... this boy's childhood growing up in the mountains of Vietnam,
right.
Living with like a Taoist sage. So super cool.
Like you do.
Like you do. to get away from the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he, Dr. Hammer is technically a clinical psychologist.
Okay.
Who then worked in this famous project where people all lived with the patients in this like dormitory and there was no hierarchy between patients and practitioners, and it was really cool in some ways, but it also kind of broke down in other ways. He kind of came away from that being like, I really think that these deep psychological things can be treated, and I don't think I have the tools currently in Western medicine to do it, and I feel frustrated.
So he was a Western practitioner.
Yeah.
I see.
And he ended up meeting Dr. Shen and then going through Chinese medicine school and like welding those two things together.
Okay. Dr. Hammer did this.
Dr. Hammer.
Okay. And Dr. Hammer is still living.
Dr. Hammer still
and
living.
And lives in Florida
or
something?
Lives in,
okay.
Yeah. He's
okay.
Like 90,
and he started the school, Dragon Rises.
Yeah.
Redbird. Is that.
Well, that's the name of his
Dragon
book.
Rises is the name of the school.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I forget the metaphor explanation, but yeah.
So the lineage goes from Dr. Shen, who is Korean American and a Chinese medicine practitioner.
Yes.
And then to Dr. Hammer, who was in this different situation, realized he didn't have the tools, and then down to your direct teacher, Brant Stickley, at NUNM.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then to Melinda and I.
Right.
So the system sort of says, like, okay, what is someone's psychological thing that they're dealing with? What Chinese medical organ pattern does it share? And sort of breaks down psychological symptoms along what we call... Zongfu diagnosis, which is the organ that it's associated with.
Right.
There's like, for example, like heart yin excess is a pattern in that system where the person has like so many feelings and ideas. It's sort of like it looks a lot like schizoaffective.
Okay.
But the person is just like words,
all the things.
Kind of manic, like can't calm down.
Right.
And the heart is like too full of stuff.
Okay.
And you'll often see like frank heart palpitations or other things in this pattern. And so you treat it the way that you, like herbally and acupuncture wise, the way you would treat that pattern.
In TCM or another Chinese medicine system.
Got yeah. it. But by understanding that it's also that psychological
in a completely different way. Right. Okay. And there is that book, Dragon Rises, Red Bird Flies, and I've read it several times, and it lays out all those patterns in pretty clear detail.
Totally.
Excruciating detail.
Yes. As Brandt says, I disavow everything that the book ever says about gender.
Oh.
And some of the stuff that says about race. But otherwise it's great. And it's a really useful lens to see things through.
Totally. Do you incorporate other systems, or are you pretty pure?
It's funny. I do use that system, but I more use the way that Brandt thinks about things, which is that he takes that system and he translates it into the six confirmations.
Right.
And then is like, well, this is Jui in excess.
Right.
Or this is whatever. Taiyang style night terrors. Or
right,
what
right.
have you.
And so... how does that actually, I mean, like, theoretically it's patients that listen to this podcast, so how does that actually, you know, is there something about your treatment style or the way that you approach things or something that a patient would notice that's different, or is it more your internal process that's affected by that?
Yeah, I mean, I would often use different points than other practitioners, but the patients wouldn't necessarily experience that or wouldn't necessarily notice that, but I think... I often ask questions like, where do you feel this panic in your body?
Right.
Which not everybody does, and that is really helpful information to tell us what organs are involved and what channels are involved. And I often do sort of like opening up different parts of the body with needling that other people don't necessarily do. Like, I do a lot of needling in the abdomen of points that other people might not do.
Or don't even remember.
Yeah, a lot of people just do points on the arms.
On the extremities,
and, you
right.
know, I do a lot of other stuff, so... And then some of the questions that I ask might be a little bit more in-depth as far as feelings are concerned and body
sure.
sensations.
So we're talking here... You said, you know, that there's chronic pain patterns and how they relate to trauma, but you also treat kind of overt mental emotional concerns
yeah.
as well. Which is something that, you know, is one of the reasons that I was excited to have you in here, just because I don't do as much of that work personally, although, of course, we all do all
right.
of the work. But
right.
But I'm interested in what kind of, you know, in your clinical experience so far, or maybe even in the school clinic, are there certain types of, you know, mental emotional difficulties that you've really felt like this system works exceptionally well for?
Yeah, I've treated a lot of night terrors.
Hmm.
Really well, which is fun because most people who have night terrors just don't even think it's possible for them to not
to
have them.
Better,
and they,
right.
they get really used to them because they're like, I have this horrible nightmare every
right.
night or every third night.
Right.
And I just don't go to sleep as often as I can or like whatever.
Right.
But in Western medicine, you know, they're just like, do you want Ambien?
Right.
If you don't want Ambien, then we don't know what to tell you.
The only pharmaceutical option. So
yeah,
so, okay,
so that's good. And then, you know, anxiety, depression. I've had some good experience treating bipolar.
Okay.
I generally, people who I'm treating are also on medication.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Bipolar is one of those things where medication is generally super great.
Helpful. Yeah, yeah. So you do sometimes work with patients who are being co-treated by other practitioners
yeah.
or whatever. I think that's one thing that people really always have concern about, you know, especially if they're medicated. They worry that Chinese herbs will interfere with their medications.
Yeah.
Or, so do you, you know, I mean, do you think about that and look into that?
I do. Dharmananda Subbuti, who's a practitioner around town here, did... a lot of research into from like which herbs interact with which things in the Chinese medicine pharmacopoeia, and basically he found that like St. John's wort is the one herb that really interacts with stuff
yeah
consistently, and we don't really
yeah.
ever
use
St. John's wort, so yeah,
no big deal.
I'm generally not concerned. I mean, there's some like blood thinners that are a little bit, you gotta be careful with that, and blood moving herbs
sure
not not you can never do these things together, but just like watch it,
be aware.
But yeah. Generally speaking, like I'm not super concerned.
Not too concerned.
We're treating side effects with herbs most of the time,
right?
You know, especially true. With antidepressants, like
yeah.
dampness and lethargy and stuff like that.
So, so you do herbs, you do acupuncture, you do any other stuff like body work or any kind of business?
Reiki was my first modality. I actually got my Reiki master while I was in high school. And so I don't usually do like Reiki-only treatments.
Sure.
But it happens.
It's part of
that. I do it. And I do a little bit of cranial sacral as well. Okay. Usually in just like a, it just comes up.
Sure.
Way.
Sure.
I don't do standalone treatments, but yeah,
okay.
And then I've done some massage at various times.
Okay, so you incorporate stuff based on needs. Are there any kinds of things, you know, kind of disorders or particular types of folks or something that you feel that you can treat well that other people don't know? You know, I find that all the time. You know, I'll be talking to a patient, for instance. I mean, actually, I just had this conversation with somebody. And I've been treating them for their back pain, and they were like, my husband has depression. And, you know, is that something that Chinese medicine can treat? And it's like, well, and they genuinely had no idea,
totally.
Right? And so I'm just wondering, like, aside from that, are there any other disorders that, like, you know, that the audience might be like, oh, really? That's something Chinese medicine can treat?
Yeah. Let's see. So depression and anxiety are good ones.
I mean, bipolar, that's an interesting...
Yeah, bipolar... You know, with bipolar, part of what we can do is, like, people tend to oscillate between high and low extremes, and what the medication can do and what we can also help do is, like, bring that oscillation into a smaller range.
Right.
So that people... and also we can fight against the numbness that can set in from the medication, which people don't like.
Yeah.
And so we can sort of help... fine-tune that experience for people with acupuncture and Chinese herbs so they can, like, not be in extremes all the time but also still have feelings.
Right.
Which
feelings are okay.
Yeah. People usually want. And then I run into this all the time, you know, urinary disorders, surgery recovery, liver stuff. I have a patient who has really intense liver disease, and there's a lot of great Chinese medicine for that. You know, what's interesting is, like, in China, there's all these Chinese medicine / Western medicine hospitals.
Right.
And so there's so much case research from China
right.
about every disease ever.
Right, anything.
And
yeah.
so we can treat basically all those things, but because of the way the American health system works, like, people just don't come to acupuncturists for those things.
Right.
And, like, that makes sense, but
right.
we can treat all kinds of weird stuff, so... Right. Gallstones. We can help people pass gallstones and break them up without surgery and without,
right.
you know.
Yeah, it's always so surprising when you talk to people and they don't understand that it's kind of a more or less complete medical system. It doesn't mean that it can do all things always and it should
sure.
never be anything else, but it does mean that, you know, somebody comes in with back pain, yes, of course we treat that.
Yeah.
And even anxiety, I think, is especially in Portland, is becoming more known. Like,
yeah.
oh yeah, like de-stressing and that kind of
right.
thing. But like you said, liver disease, like, it's just not something that most people would think about. So
yeah.
so that's interesting. And, you know, and I think now is as good a time as any to talk just more generally about this article that you wrote. You know, and one of the things that you've really been interested in is reaching out to the LGBT community, and that article you kind of touched on some aspects of your thesis and
yeah.
and your kind of broader thinking. So I think that's just interesting to let people know, like, you know, why I mean, it's a funny thing, right? Because the LGBT community is more likely to come in for alternative care
right.
than is the community at large, and that's always been very interesting to me. I understand it,
right.
but you have some particular ideas, particularly around community and like your desires to contribute to that community.
Yeah.
So anything you can say about that, you know, hopefully we'll get into it in more depth in a future episode. But
yeah, I've just witnessed people's mostly people's trauma being such a barrier to maintaining relationships, and in a macro sort of way, any community that is more in the crosshairs of any kind of systematic violence, if everyone coming into any kind of group situation has a lot of unhealed trauma that
yeah.
is affecting the way they interact with each other,
yeah.
then there's always drama. There's always people that are like, falling out of connection or doing stuff that drives people away.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
or not having the time and energy even to contribute to causes, right, because they're sick all the time or whatever.
Exactly. And so it's this sort of like self-perpetuating cycle, but the because of the way those things are connected, if you help individual people, then it feeds into that cycle in a positive way.
Right.
And so getting people that care, I think, can really help communities as a whole be more functional as individual people have more resources to be well themselves and to help other people, and to just, I mean, it's one thing to talk about like kind of overt activism, like we're going to go knock on doors, but mostly community health is just about like, can we share space together? Can we have meals together? Like, am I calling you every now and again and checking in? And the more people are able to do those things, the more that communities are able to move forward and get their needs met. So historically, you know, the queer and trans community haven't had good access to any kind of care, especially like care for psychological stuff continues to be particularly difficult. And so for people to be able to access quality care that enables them to have a better quality of life, but also better interrelation, better personal relationships.
Sure.
Yeah. That's good.
Cool. All right. Well, I think, I mean, we'll get back together again and talk in more depth. And, you know, I think it'd be great to explore some of the articles because, you know, writing is writing, but talking, you know, maybe you can expand a little bit more because I think it's a topic that's extremely interesting. We're coming into Pride season too, so it's nice to get the information out there. But in the meantime, maybe you could just say, so you're at the Portland location and you're working Monday,
Tuesday
Wednesday. On most insurance panels. Yep. And so ready and willing. And if somebody wanted to chat with you about stuff, do you prefer email, phone? What's the best way to get in touch?
Email is probably a good preliminary way.
Okay, so it's just rowan@watershedwellnesspdx.com. Yeah. And we'll be sure to link to some of the things we've talked about here, including the articles, and then also to your profile so people can sign up.
Great. Awesome.
So thanks for chatting with me today.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, take care.